Okay. Okay, there was, we've been discussing the verse. Where does it come from? Yeah, Shukadev's description of how Krishna expanded himself into all the Vishnu forms, first into cowherd boys and calves, and then they turned into Vishnu forms. All those expanded forms, even though they were not didn't completely reveal his opulences, still, every one of those forms was purely spiritual. We're continuing with 54.3. Tathaiva Anandamurtim Upaguya Drishatma Labdam Ityadau Durbhyam Stanantaragatam Parirabhyakantam Anandamurtim Ajahadati Dirgatapam. That's from the chapter. No, it is not from the chapter we read this morning. It's from later on in the 10th canto. Anyway, Ityadau cha darshana lingana bhyam anyartatvam vyavichidyate. So also in the statements, taking him into their hearts through their eyes, they embraced him, the embodiment of all ecstasy. And another statement from another chapter, with her two arms, she embraced between her breasts her lover Sri Krishna, the personification of bliss, and thus she gave up her long-standing distress. I think that's describing Kubja. Anyway, in these statements, we see that the acts of seeing and embracing exclude the possibility of the other meaning. In other words, the impersonal idea of what a murti is, that it's not a personal body, it's something else, doesn't fit with these descriptions of the queens and Krishna's girlfriend, Kubja, actually seeing him in person and actually embracing him. Uktam cha mahavarahe, and it's also said in the Mahavaraha Purana, sarve nitya shashvatascha dehas tasya paratmanah heyo padeya rahita naiva prakriti jakvachit paramananda sondoha gyanamatrasya sarvatah deha dehi vibheda deha dehi bidachatra neshvare vidyate kvachit iti. Mahabharata Purana says, all the bodily forms of the Supreme Lord are eternal and unchanging. They never undergo increase or loss, and in no time are they born from material nature. They are all full of supreme bliss, fully aware of everything, complete in all transcendental qualities, and devoid of all faults. I think the Mahavaraha Purana is an Upa Purana. It's not the same. It's not the Varaha Purana, but it's another one, the Mahavaraha. Well, we don't have a reference. We don't know where it is. We don't find it in the Varaha Purana anyway. Anyway, all the bodies of the Supreme Soul, sarve dehas paratmanaha, they're nitya, eternal, shashvata. Nitya means always exists, but shashvata means it, as it's always existing, it doesn't change. and their heopadeya rahita. There's nothing material about them, either good or bad. Heya means that which should be rejected. Upadeya means that which should be accepted. But there's no such any material qualities in the bodies, plural, of the Supreme Soul. Maybe the volume can be turned up a little bit. Paramananda Sandoha, they're simply full of supreme bliss, all these bodies, and also full of nothing but pure knowledge, Jnana Matras. And finally, the statement, which is quoted quite often by Madhvacharya, Prabhupada refers to it in Chaitanya Charitamrita also, Deha Dehi Bida Chatra Neshware Vijate Kwachit. In no way is there ever any difference between the body and the person who has the body when we're dealing with the Supreme Lord. There's no difference between him and his body. So if he's spiritual, then his body has to be spiritual because his body is him. Okay, and we have a commentary on this. The commentary says, one more short statement, Sri Shukaha. For the newcomers, when we have this at the end of an anuchet, and it's always there marking the end of the anuchet, just this name, somebody's name, that indicates the end of the anuchet. It's a way of punctuating the end. It also tells us who spoke it. Sometimes it says somebody to somebody. So here it says Sri Shuka. I translate that as the verse under discussion, Bhagavatam 10.13.54, was spoken by Sri Shukadeva. Commentary. Okay, when Krishna and Balaram passed along the streets of Mathura for the first time, when they were out to kill Kamsa, the ladies of the city embraced them mentally. And then the third line of this is what was cited just now by Jiva Goswami in the paragraph. But I'm reading the whole verse now, which is from 10. It's from the 41st chapter of the 10th canto, verse 28. Drishtva muhu Shrutamanudvata chetasastam tad prekshono smita sudokshana labdamana ananda murti mupaguhya dvishatma labdham rishadvacho jahur anantam arindata arindamadhim. The ladies of Mathura had repeatedly heard about Krishna. And thus, as soon as they saw him, their hearts melted. They felt honored that he was sprinkling upon them the nectar of his glances and broad smiles. Taking him into their hearts through their eyes, they embraced him, the embodiment of all ecstasy. And as their bodily hairs stood on end, O subduer of enemies, they forgot the unlimited distress caused by his absence. And then we say, a few days later, a very fortunate lady of Mathura, Kubja, embraced Krishna literally, as the words Dorbyam describe, also quoted by Jiva Goswami here. So these women, the ladies of the city, and in particular Kubja, would not be attracted in the conjugal mood to an impersonal so-called Murti of Brahman. There is no taste of Madhurya Rasa in Brahman. Now, what about the Maha Varaha Purana. The Mahavaraha Purana may be different from the Varaha Purana included among the 18 major Puranas, but if so, it is apparently not available anymore. So some people say that the Mahavaraha is different than the regular Varaha Purana, but there is no copy anywhere of a separate Mahavaraha Purana. So maybe, but we don't have it anymore. Therefore, we can't tell you what the verse number is. The pair of verses cited here are also not found in the extant Varaha Purana, but they have been quoted as coming from the Mahavaraha Purana by several authorities, including Srila. Several people have quoted it. Srila Sanatana Goswami in his Dig Darshani on the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, second part, chapter 4, verse 160. Also Srila Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, second part, first chapter, verses 245 and 46. And Rupa Goswami also quotes it in the Laghu Bhagavatamrita, chapter 5, verse 86. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti in his Sararta Darshani, his commentary on Bhagavatam, he quotes it in the very first verse of the Bhagavatam. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan quotes it in his Vedanta Shamantika and also in his Prameya Ratnavali. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes it in the 26th chapter of Jivadharma. Srila Bhaktivinoda in his Amnaya Sutra, text 7, cites this verse, or these verses, two verses, as being from the Varaha Purana. So in one place, everybody else says Mahavaraha. Once, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it's just Varaha Purana. So you figure it out. There's your information. If someone asks you, what's this Mahavaraha Purana, we're not sure. Any questions?
In your translation to this quotation from Mahavaraha Purana, there was something, increase or loss, the forms of the Lord do not have any increase or loss in them. Oh. Is that something like that?
They never undergo increase or loss. Yeah.
I heard those words.
And that's why I said Heya Upadeya?
Yeah, I was just thinking if you could explain why you have used those words for...
Well,
it seems like Heya Upadeya.
Well,
yeah.
Heya Upadeya, I don't know why I did that. Are you sure I didn't copy this translation from Prabhupada? Anyway, it can mean that, I guess, because Heya means that which is to be given up, and Upadeya is that which be to be accepted. So you can, you know, you accept the food you eat and you give up something else after you digest it. So... I could mean that, but I'm not sure why I chose that meaning. I'll mark it as questionable. Otherwise, it would mean there's nothing bad, nothing contemptible or praiseworthy in them. Yeah, Madan Mohan Guru?
In 3:32:25. There's a similar expression about Lord Vishnu, exactly the same, Heyupadeya Rahitam.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada takes it to mean he doesn't see anything as superior or inferior.
He doesn't see anything.
Yeah.
As superior, okay.
He takes it that way.
Hmm. Where is that?
3:32:25.
That's not the same verse, is it?
No, not the same verse. This verse is not quoted in Prabhupada's books. But
it usually means something like, there's nothing desirable or undesirable in it. Usually that's how it's taken. Anyway, I may have made a mistake here. I'm marking it. And let me mark it again with a question mark. One second. Let me just do this.
Yeah, Sarvagibhu.
Could it be that an original text of Varaha Purana just is not not the same as it was few centuries before, and therefore we cannot find in this this copy this verse.
Which Varaha Purana
Yeah. Maybe Varaha Purana had been changed, or we don't have complete manuscript of this, and therefore we cannot change. We cannot find this.
Yeah,
verse.
That's possible too. Therefore, it's unsettled question. Maybe it. But the thing is, why do the same acharyas refer to this verse as Mahavaraha Purana, and elsewhere where they quote other verses, they just say Mahavaraha Purana? If it's the same book, why do they give it two different names?
But is there any list of all the Puranas, and is there any name of
there are some Mahavaraha lists Purana? Of Upapuranas. But I don't know if there's a Mahavaraha on the list. There's a book, scholarly book, that was written about 40 years ago that's a survey of Puranas, and he mentions Mahavaraha and has some, you know, some of his evidence about it. I must have looked at that before I wrote this commentary, and apparently still even, no matter what scholarship has been done about it, it's the question is still unsettled.
So it might be that Acharya, they had different copy of this manuscripts of both Mahavaraha Purana, if it's there, and Varaha Purana, and they chosen this verse to quote.
Well, Jiva Swami is maybe repeating the quote from someone earlier than him. So he may not have had the Mahavaraha, but he may have just had someone else quoting it from before.
Somebody like Madhvacharya or Manujacharya.
I think Madhvacharya has quoted this verse also, yes.
Yeah, they might have quoted it in their commentary, and he just picked up.
Okay, so anyway, there's possibilities, but we're not sure which one it is. Okay, yes, Boo.
Maybe relevant. I read one verse which is quoted from Vishnu Sahasranam, like Shri Rama Rama Rameti.
Yes.
And also in many places they say the same verse is from Brihat Vishnu Sahasranam. And some places same verse as Vishnu Sahasranam. Something similar to
I think there might be. No, but that verse is from the famous Vishnu Sahasranam, spoken by Bhishma Dev.
Yeah.
It's definitely in there.
Yeah. So sometimes the same.
Well, in that case, but there may be another short version of the Vishnu Sahasranam somewhere else. I think there are more than one Vishnu Sahasranams.
Okay.
Anyway, there's also Narada Purana and Brihat Naradiya. They're definitely two different books. We have both of them here. Okay.
Probably one small question.
Okay.
You quoted this verse, Satyam Jnanam Anantam Anandam. So this Ananda bliss, we say that the living entities and the Supreme Brahman is qualitatively one and quantitatively different.
Yes.
And the qualitative oneness we refers to Satchit and Ananda. But when the same Ananda and that knowledge aspect, Chetan Ananda is more in Brahman.
Yes, it is.
So there is also a quantitative difference, even though qualitative oneness is based on these two.
Yeah, yes, there is. So otherwise, they'd be the same.
So
because the ingredients are the same, but the quantity, not only the volume, but the depth, you know, the degree of the bliss and the knowledge. It's not just how many things you know, but how well you know each one. So the Supreme Lord knows more things than anybody else, and he knows each one of those things better than everyone else. Therefore, he's called Sarva Vid Sarva Gya Yasya Gyana Manomayo Tapaha. That's the Mundaka Upanishad. He's called both Sarva Vid and Sarva Gya. And Rang Ramanuja in his commentary on that Upanishad says it's not repetitive. Sarva Vid means he knows all things. And Sarvagya knows means that he knows every one of those things completely. It's two different ideas. So that's quantitative difference. We have bliss, but we're not in absolute complete bliss about everything the way the Supreme Lord is.
So when we say this, we are qualitatively one with the Lord. That has some kind of specific case for that. Achintya Bheda Bheda Tattva. Achintya Bheda Bheda. We are one with Supreme Lord in quality and difference in quantity.
Well that's a partial explanation of how we're the same and different.
Okay.
But it's achintya. You cannot fully explain the sameness and difference. There's still something illogical about it or impossible for us to completely understand.
Okay.
But we get some partial understanding in terms of this idea of being the same in quality but different in quantity.
Okay.
It doesn't fully explain the sameness and difference, but it gives us some idea.
Thank you.
Okay. Now we'll start the next anuchid, number 51. 55. 55.1. 55 is not too long. It has only two paragraphs. I've broken it up into two parts. So starting. Itam ev abhipretyaha. With this very idea in mind, it is said. What very idea in mind? That, his body is spiritual and therefore his devotees see him and embrace him because his body is real and it's purely spiritual. They wouldn't be looking at or embracing something that was material. And if the body wasn't personal, they wouldn't be doing that either. Now, this is a quote from the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. It's from the chapter of Brahma's prayers. No, wait a minute. Maybe I'm looking at the wrong number. Yeah, but it's from the end of the chapter. It's actually spoken by Shukadev to Parikshit. The verse is, Krishnam enam avehi tvam atmanam akilatmanam jagaditaya sopyatra Devabhati Mayaya. You should, this is Parikshit hearing, this is being spoken to Parikshit by Shukadev. You should know Krishna to be the original soul of all living entities. For the benefit of the whole universe, he has, out of his causeless mercy, appeared as an ordinary human being. He has done this by the strength of his internal potency. Okay. Now here in that verse, spoken by Shukadev, there's the word enam. Enam means this. What's special about that form of the word? It's a substitute for idam and ayam, right? And it's only used, it can't be used at the beginning of a sentence. And of course, idam as a pronoun has to refer to something you already have referred to before. The pronoun substitute for a noun, the noun must be there somewhere. Of course, it says Krishna menam, this Krishna. But which Krishna? In other words, what idea of Krishna? Enam namau dia te bravapuche ityadi varnita rupam. This one, enam, whose form has been described in the words beginning, I offer my respects to you, whose body is dark blue, like a new cloud. Well, that's the very first verse of the same chapter, spoken by Brahma, the beginning of his prayers. That's the Enam, that Krishna. The Krishna who, the little boy who was standing there with his hands dirty with a lump of yogurt, and that Brahma approached to offer prayers. That supreme form. So that one, avehi, mat prasada labda vidvatayaiv anubhava, natu tark adina vicharayet yartaha. You should know, anubhava, anubhava, you should experience. You should know to be the Supreme Lord. Avehi means know. You should please know. You should know, and then that means you should know him to be the Supreme Soul. Because that's what the second line says, Atmanam Akilatmanam, the soul of all souls. You should know him to be the soul of all souls. And that means, according to Jiva Goswami here, Avehi, you should know, means you should perceive. Anubhava, perceive, please perceive. With the wisdom gained by my favor, not guess by hypothesizing and other speculative logic. Whose favor? Who's my? Who's me? Shukadev, in this case. Parikshit should understand. Jiva Goswami is saying that Shukadev is telling Parikshit, you should, by my favor, understand that Krishna is the Supreme Soul. If Parikshit had just sat down in the library and read the Bhagavatam, he wouldn't have understood it. But because he's hearing it from Shukadev in person, he gets the blessings of Shukadev, and he can understand that Krishna, that little boy, is actually the Supreme Lord. Did I say this? Not guess by hypothesizing and other speculative logic. You should know it for fact. Don't guess. Don't speculate. That's the meaning of the one word, avehi. And, okay. Evam bhuto pi mayaya kripaya jagaditaya sarvasyapi swatmanam prati chittakarshanaya dehiva jiva iva abhati kridati. So the words are jagatitaya sopyatra dehiva abhati mayaya. And although he is such, he's the Krishna, this little boy is the Supreme Soul. But although he's such, by his maya, which means his mercy, Jiva Goswami tells us, maya means kripa. By his maya, or his mercy, not illusion, but mercy, he appears. And that means abhati, that's in the verse, means kridati. He's playing like an embodied being, deva. Dehi, Iva. He's playing like an embodied being, like a finite soul, a jiva, for the benefit of the whole world, jagatitaya. In other words, what does he mean for the benefit of the whole world? That everybody in the world is going to win the jackpot in the lottery? No. It means in order to attract the minds of everyone to himself. And then Iva Shabdena Shri Krishna's tu na jivavat pitak deham pavishtavan iti cha gamyate. From the word Iva, as if, Iva means as if, it is also understood that Shri Krishna has not entered a separate body as does a finite living being. He appears as an embodied being, but he doesn't take a body. He already has his spiritual body, and he simply reveals himself. We take bodies that aren't really us. There's a difference between us and our body. But Krishna and his body are the same. He doesn't take a body. He already has it. But he appears, as in our eyes, as if he's another one of us. An embodied being, but he and his body are the same. Okay. Then the commentary on this Brahma, the creator of the universe, learned from his contests of wits with Krishna that simple village boy as he appears to be, Krishna is indeed the original form of the absolute truth. He is the super soul residing in the hearts of all living beings. And he sometimes displays in this world his most favorite pastimes. The body of that cowherd boy in Vraja is the same eternal Brahman, not an illusion temporarily conjured up to humor the ignorant. Okay, it's not fake. That body of Krishna in Vraja is real. The verse cited here was spoken by Shukadev to Parikshit, who, after hearing Brahma's prayers from Shukadev, asked how the mothers of the boys and calves stalled by Brahma felt more love for Krishna than for their real children during the year that Krishna replaced them by himself. That's the context of the statement by Shukadev. That question had been asked by Parikshit. How come they were feeling more love for these imitations of their children than from their actual children? Shukadev answered that in general a person's own self is more dear than children. Okay. Wealth or anything else. Krishna should be the most dear to everyone because he is the supreme self of all. Parikshit could understand this sublime truth because he received the full mercy of his guru Shukadev. As Jiva Goswami says, Mat prasada labda vidvataya, by my favor, dear king, you have become perfect in spiritual knowledge. Then the other verse quoted, Naumidyate, at the beginning of that 14th chapter of the 10th canto. That begins the prayers Brahma offered to Krishna as his apology for the escapade of stealing the boys and calves. In that first verse, Brahma describes his wonder at recognizing that this small child, his hand dirtied by the remnants off of someone else's plate, he is the original form of Brahma's own master, Narayan, the lord of Vaikuntha, and of his own father, Garbhodakshay Vishnu. I'm making a distinction here between Brahma's father and Brahma's worshipable lord. Brahma's father is Garbhodakshay Vishnu, and his worshipable lord is Narayan in Vaikuntha. That form of Krishna is subsequently referred to by Shukadev with the pronoun Enam, meaning the same one mentioned earlier, with the injunction Avehi, may you understand. So that's like a blessing. It's not just a command. We can take it as an empowerment. May you please understand. The guru blesses it by that injunction. The guru blesses and empowers his disciple to realize the mercy of Krishna's identity, a mystery into which mental speculation can never gain entrance. You could argue, well, what if Parikshit was sitting in the library and read that statement by Shukadev, blessing him? Wouldn't that work? Well, okay, but if Shukadev hadn't heard it personally from, if Parikshit hadn't heard it face to face from Shukadev, there wouldn't be any Bhagavatam sitting in the library. Okay. Krishna's body is not separate like the bodies of finite beings. Everything emanates from it and depends on it, on Krishna's body. The Supreme Lord is embodied, but not the same way as the jivas, because his body is not limited in its lifespan, nor is it under the restrictive laws of material nature. Only misled impersonalists wrongly understand this statement by Shukadev. Avyaktam vyaktimapanam manyate mam abuddhayah. Unintelligent men think that I was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Only misled impersonalists think that I'm really impersonal, but I'm pretending to be a person. Okay, the Supreme Lord's body is not under the restrictive laws of material nature. Our bodies are. And that body is the source. Everything emanates from it. Everything depends on it. Not just from him, but from his body in particular. We know the material world is created out of the body of Mahavishnu. First of all, the glances and the jivas and the time energy and the karma and the sobhava of the jivas and Lord Shiva all come out of his glance. That's coming out of the body, coming out of the eyes of Mahavishnu. And then while he's asleep, the shells of the universe come out of his body. So the universe, not counting the part that's contributed by Prakriti, but the part that's contributed by Mahavishnu, is coming out of his body. And then he maintains the whole universe by his body. Brahma creates it. He himself maintains it, but he does it just like anybody acts through his body, his senses. So Vishnu also acts through his spiritual body and senses to maintain the universe. And that body is not limited in its lifespan. It lives forever. Nor is it under the restrictive laws of material nature. So I'm sitting here giving a class. If I hadn't gone to the toilet before class, I'd be sitting here wanting to go to the toilet and have to run out as soon as the end of the class. That's the restriction of the law of material nature. Lord Vishnu doesn't suffer any such restriction. Okay. Any questions? Yes.
Hare Krishna. Regarding the previous statement, in the previous Anucheda, Jiva Goswami seems to be using the fact that devotees embrace Krishna's form personally as a proof that Krishna's forms are spiritual. Doesn't it apparently, ostensibly commit a circular reasoning fallacy? Because first we have to prove that devotees don't embrace anything else but spiritual objects.
Well, we can take that as already proven. We know from what we know about devotees that they reject everything, pure devotees. They reject everything material.
So that's more known for us.
Yeah, taking that as an already established fact, then we can move on to that they wouldn't be embracing anything material.
So in other words, for us, the transcendence of devotees is an easier established fact that Krishna's transcendence.
Yeah, because we can see the devotees. We can poke them and see if they scream when we poke them. No, we can't do that to the invisible Adhokshaja Lord.
Anyway, but that implies also our knowledge of what transcendence really is. If we know really that they're transcendental, no, that means that we really know what transcendental is.
Well, maybe we can't tell, you know, in an absolute sense, empirical sense. But for practical purposes, we can understand how devotees are transcendental. To all extents and purposes, we can accept. Anyway, we accept it because we're told by Shastra that pure devotees are transcendental. We're told by Krishna in the Gita. You know, he goes through at length to describe the qualities of pure devotees in the 12th chapter and elsewhere. Na parishyet priyam prapya no dvijay prapya cha priyam. So he tells us our devotees are like that. They're transcendental. So we know it not so much empirically, because what do we know? You know, okay, I poke you and you don't scream, but you're doing that just to prove something. But Krishna tells us in the Gita the devotees are transcendental. That's where we get our certain knowledge from.
And then we use that.
So if we've read the Bhagavad Gita, then we can understand the Bhagavatam. Mm-hmm. You know, that these devotees in the Bhagavatam embracing the Lord wouldn't be doing it if he had a material body.
But then we use Krishna's statement in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita to prove his own transcendence. Then we use Krishna's statement in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita to prove his own transcendence.
And it's completely circular reasoning.
Yeah.
Yeah. We accept what Krishna says so says because he says so. But he's the absolute authority.
Yes. The in this commentary also in the Transcendental Jiva Goswami says
What does he say? The same thing?
Yeah. Jiva Goswami says that Mahavishnu's body, Mahavishnu through his body and senses is maintaining the world, yes. So his body is transcendental. But also we hear that Supreme Lord is Satya Kama, Satya Sankalpa. By his will, he maintains and he does. Does he really do with his body and senses?
Well, we read the description how his body is employed. He uses his energies, but his body is part of that. He uses his spiritual energies through his body. And also, he could do it without his body, but as far as the material creation goes, we read the description in the Bhagavatam and elsewhere of what actually happens. And it involves Mahavishnu lying down with his body, looking at Maya with his eyes, and sweating out of his... I mean, how could you argue that perspiration is not a bodily function? You know, it is, you know, definitely. So, you know, by his bodily functions, by his looking with his eyes, by his sweating out of the hair holes of his body, he created the universe. He didn't have to, but we're reading how he did. He could have done it without going to sleep. He could have just made a phone call and said, okay, create a universe for me. And it would have been done. But he got involved himself and he used his body. He didn't have to. Sorry,
I have a question regarding this Guru Tattva. When Guru blesses a disciple, okay, may you understand Krishna, and he understands. But for example, we have many statements in the writings of Śrīla Rūpa Gosvāmī, Sanatana Gosvāmī, previous acharyas, when they also bless, may Krishna will be pleased for you, pleased with you, or may understand as Krishna. So what is the power of those statements in our regard for us?
For us? Yeah. Well, the person who that statement was first spoken to gets the original blessings, but we, by reading the same statement, if we're listening with faith and attention, Sanatan Goswami's book or Rupa Goswami's book, and we read how he blessed somebody else, or he blessed the readers in general.
Yeah.
The readers in general.
General.
So if we're reading, if we're one of the readers and we're actually paying attention faithfully, then we get those blessings. That's how the author is empowering his readers.
In the same way...
But we're reading Nectar of Devotion under the order and guidance of Prabhupada. There we get the real blessings. That our guru told us to read Nectar of Devotion. And promised us, if you read it, you'll understand devotional service. He gave us the blessings. So the blessings were reiterated by Prabhupada.
But for example, if we are not disciples of Srila Prabhupada, but still we read his books, is there a same power as if he would be...
You mean if we're not connected with ISKCON at all, or we're a disciple of a disciple?
Yeah, disciple of a disciple. If we are not direct disciples.
But Prabhupada is your Shiksha Guru. So all our instructions are coming from Prabhupada. He's the ISKCON Sampradaya Acharya, as far as ISKCON is concerned. So just like Sri Sampradaya, they get all their instructions from basically from Ramanujacharya, and they further elaborate on them. So everything we all the knowledge we received, all the empowered knowledge, Divya Gyan Ride Prakashito, our own guru, turns on that light within our heart. But what we see with that light is Prabhupada's instructions. That's where the original blessings are coming to us from. Okay. Yes,
Prabhu, you mentioned that Anubhava means to follow, to understand Krishna by the mercy of Guru.
Well, it literally just means to experience.
to experience, yeah. I once heard that it means to follow.
But anubhava with a short a, not a long one. It's a different word.
Oh.
Anubhava means power or influence. But that's a different word. It's a long A.
Oh. So how about that anubhava that means to follow a certain mood? Is it the same?
Anubhava? No, neither one of them means that.
Oh.
Because it's anu?
Mm-hmm.
No, anubhu means to experience. It doesn't mean, it doesn't have the idea of following it. I don't think. Check the dictionary. See if it means that. I don't think it means that. Anubhu. It doesn't mean to subsequently be, to be following something else. Anubhu. I don't think it means anything like that. Anything about following in the meaning of anubhu? Any of the meanings? Which? I'm sorry, I can't hear.
To incline to.
The closest that gets us to turn or incline to.
Be inclined
to
toward.
Incline, to incline to. It
okay, well, that's not exactly following.
To be after, attain, equal, to be useful, to help, to turn, to incline to notice, perceive,
okay, so that but that's to what after?
To experience, to attempt.
To experience.
To be attempt. After.
Yeah, the basic meaning that we get in our books, you know, the way the Bhagavatam and the books written by Acharyas use the word anubhava, means experience. Anubhu, to experience. Experience with your own senses, your own mind.
So the term of being favored, it has to be understood by the context, I guess.
Hold a second. Yeah, it's Jiva Goswami explaining the context here. He's telling us. He's talking about favor. But the word itself doesn't indicate that.
Thank you.
But the word in the context, that here is the guru telling the disciple, please, because it's the thing is that it's it's the imperative tense. You please understand. So it's not an order. You understand or I'll beat you. It's not like that. It's like it's the idea that I'm going to ask Krishna to give you the power to understand it. It's a blessing. That's indicated not by the meaning of the verb, but by the form of the verb, that it's an imperative. My dear boy, please understand it. That's what Jiva Goswami is bringing out. That the imperative, that it being in the imperative, or an injunction, indicates the idea of this is because this will be by my favor. Those are Jiva Goswami's words, not the words of the verse.
Prabhu, here there is a distinction between Garbhodaksha Vishnu and Narayana is made. Narayana is the master of Brahma, and Garbhodaksha Vishnu is the father of Brahma.
Well, yeah, and I'm saying it's sort of poetic. I mean, they're not two different people, really. Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Krishna is spiritual master of Brahma. Like, the distinction.
But there's different, slightly different bhavas. The mood of Mahavishnu is not exactly the same as the mood of Narayan and Vaikuntha. They're enjoying different relationships and different pastimes. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu and Narayan. So there is a difference in bhava. Okay, so therefore, to be, have a relationship with one or with the other is a slightly different kind of relationship because the bhava is different. Brahma's got both relationships. He's got, but one of them is his relationship as father and son, and the other relationship is guru and disciple. It's like his guru is his father, but when he's acting as the guru, it's a different mood. You know, your father may give you initiation, but you deal with him as your father in some situations, and in some other situations, you deal with him as your guru. Different moods. Therefore, usually, in our line, the father doesn't give initiation. It gets mixed up. Okay. All right. We're supposed to stop at 20 after? Okay, so we'll stop now and finish it up tomorrow. Thank you, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.